This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey, everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast. And you guys know what we do. We are busy slicing and dicing Warren Buffett's investing strategies over the many years we've been doing this. And we continue to find little treasures, always. It just seems to go on and on.
And we're learning how to change the world with our money. That's how I like to think of it.
Oh, that's a very cool thing. We're changing the world with our money?
Yeah.
Really? If we get rich, do we change the world to be better?
I guess that's not how I think about it. I think about it in like, let's invest in things that are great and are run by ethical people making things that I want to support.
Well, now you're bringing values into money.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often. Actually, it happens a lot. People don't realize how much individual values impact a capitalistic society, right? Because they're not realizing what kind of values it takes for an entrepreneur to build a really big company. It's just, it's extraordinary that most, I would say most of the people who built really billion-dollar fortunes didn't do it for the money. I would say offhand, the money was a side effect of doing what they really wanted to do. You know, you think of what Bill Gates was doing with, you know, Microsoft Basic or whatever it was called, Basic language, and what Steve Jobs did with an interface, and what the guys did at Google who were just trying to figure out a solution to a really complicated problem.
Yeah.
In search.
That's fair.
Working on AI right now, you know? I mean, obviously, a lot of people start a business for the sole purpose of making money. But in my experience, those businesses tend to be more of a commodity-type business.
Yeah, and usually they, frankly, like having worked with entrepreneurs, they don't do that well. Because there's no oomph behind the product. There's no, like, desire to change things. There's no solution coming out that, you know, nobody else has thought of. It's usually... Right. You know, less imaginative than that. But yeah, I think that's, I don't know. I think they are very happy to have their billions, but yeah, probably didn't go into it thinking it was going to turn out that way. I agree with that.
Yeah. And I'm not sure how many billions there are. I mean, when you try to think about starting your own company, I mean, many of you are probably thinking about that at some point in time. And it's just like, and to do what? Right? I mean, okay, I could start a company that cleans houses. I mean, there's a limit to what I can think about. I'm not all that creative, right? It's like, could I think of a company that was going to fix the search engine problem?
Oh, you mean if you're just trying to be like, I would like to start a company. What will that company do?
I want to make millions of dollars. Clearly, the fastest way to do that is to start your own business because you're working for somebody else. You look at all these gurus on the online who are so happy to charge you for, you know, trying to coach you into starting your own business.
Yeah.
And the business they started is the business of coaching you to start your own business.
Yeah, totally.
And some of them even sell you how to coach other people to start their own
business. Oh, totally. Yes, I've seen those. It's like, all right. So
a whole pile of people that never started their own business in their lives other than coaching are teaching people to start their own business.
Is a business. So there's a little bit there. But yeah, it is hilarious. I agree.
Well, if you ever do it, you're going to find out how hard it is to really come up with something unique. I mean, this education company that we started just came out of the ground organically. I didn't even want to do it. It just sort of happened. And, you know, somebody asks you to go do something and then you do it. And the same thing with me writing a book. I mean, I didn't plan on writing a book. I like to write, but it took Marcy Shimoff to push me into it.
And me.
And you. And by the way,
do you remember you, me telling you that you needed to write that book?
Absolutely.
I hope and, so.
And also to start a fund. I mean, you did that too. You pushed that along.
Yeah, that was a really good thing that you did. That was
it's
really
like these
good.
Things, these things have to be almost pushed on you and to be organic, in a, I guess, in a sense, that it's going to really grow because there's a demand. And it might just be from your daughter or your wife or your husband or just your the way your job worked out. It just forces you into this thing to start your own business. I was thinking of a guy that worked for Xerox who got forced into his own business because his bosses sent him his commission check in the mail because they were angry that it was so large. It's what? Just a bizarre story.
Wait, you
yeah.
mean as opposed to what? Handing it to him at the office?
Hand it to him in the office. Congratulations, you did phenomenal. Nobody's ever done this kind of numbers before. And look at what you did. And we're so excited.
You're saying but that's what you would have, he would have liked to have happen. And instead,
positive. That's
he got
what
it
he would
in
like
the mail?
To have happen. Instead, he just got it in the mail. Like, and nobody said a word. And so he quit Xerox and started a competitive company that became super successful. And when they made their first, their salesmen made their first sales and had commission checks to do, this guy rented a big top tent and rode in on an elephant to hand out these checks. So yeah, I think he pretty much wanted to make a scene.
Is this somebody you know, or can we say the name of the company? Like, what are you talking about?
It's a story that Tom Peters told me. Okay. It was a consultant that I worked with for a while.
Okay.
And it's a great story. I'm pretty sure it's true. It's like a Xerox guy.
You know what's so funny is when you say something like that, my immediate thought, just different context, right? My immediate thought is, I hope there were no venture capitalists involved in investment because they would have been so mad that the company money was spent on a big top tent and an elephant.
True. There's the other side of it, right?
Okay. Although yeah. I guess I shouldn't say that because, you know, sushi at lunchtime and all those types of things that were going on. Anyway, we always like get going off of on some other fascinating topic.
We definitely spun that one in the entrepreneurial world, didn't we?
Yeah. And then we have a topic, you guys, and
but,
you know
but
what
there's
it is.
A topic here.
Yeah.
In Berkshire's letter that we left hanging last time.
Correct. So for anybody who didn't listen to the end of the last one, we, aka you, said that you wanted to talk about the second to last paragraph of the Berkshire letter on page 5 under what we do. The second paragraph there for anybody who's looking it up.
Right on.
Tell me.
Right on. So this is just one of those little sentences that Buffett puts in a letter, and it's quite meaningful, which is why it goes in the letter. But it sort of gets overlooked even better. And that is, he says, at Berkshire, we particularly favor the rare enterprise that can deploy additional capital at high returns in the future. So look at the words he's saying here. We particularly favor. So this is the best investor in the world saying, this is what we really want to find, right? We find all sorts of businesses with good economics, that's got good fundamentals, right?
Like but, all the basics are checked, and yet there's still some diamonds even better in there.
Exactly. So if we were to take a company he's talked about repeatedly over the years, which is See's Capital or See's Candy, See's Candy is an example Buffett points to where you just, you know, it's not rocket science. It's not breaking new ground with technology. It's just a simple company. And every year, Warren sits down and figures out how much to raise the price, you know, 4%, 5%. But that company he bought for $25 million now makes $60 or $70 million a year in free cash flow. And his point is just let the flowers grow, right? I mean, just let it grow.
But
that
curious.
Is an ordinary company. That is not one of these special companies.
Oh, okay.
Because See's Candy cannot deploy free cash at all. They can't do anything.
This is what I want to know, because you said last time that this was something we haven't really talked about. And I'm actually, what does he mean by additional capital, do you think? What is this?
He means that
he doesn't really explain it, actually.
Well, let's break out capital. So we're talking about the capital, or the flow of money, or the flow of cash. You can use all these terms kind of interchangeably. Well, I like the term cash here. So a company is creating a pile of cash out of its revenue, right? It makes sales. And we don't talk about earnings, because earnings are kind of a fiction of, I mean, obviously we talk about earnings, but not at this point. Earnings are a fiction. We've discussed that before. They're an accounting fiction.
Like the accounting capital E earnings.
Right. The accounting capital E earnings. So we're something that's not a fiction, and that is cash. It's money in the bank. That's really there. And, okay. And we're going to use that for a company that's for all these companies produce this kind of cash. Now, once they produce the cash, there's places the cash might have to go. One of the first places it has to go is to maintain. So we'll call the cash that it produced operating cash flow, okay?
Okay.
It's on the cash flow statement. And it's what cash is left after you're paying out all the stuff you've got to pay out of your operations. So you got this operating cash flow. Now, with that operating cash flow, you have some choices. You may have choices. One of the things you don't get to choose is called maintenance capital expenditure. You have to spend that to just maintain your operation. So should I go into that just a little bit more?
Yeah, do a high level for people who haven't listened to our many hours talking about this.
Okay, good. So if you have a rental house.
For everybody who knows what this is, just use your little forward 15 seconds button.
You have a rental house, you have to maintain it, or the renter's going to move out. The tenant will move out. So what is the stuff you have to maintain? Well, let's say it's your job to maintain, you know, hauling the garbage away, taking care of the lawn, or maybe that's not part of it, but certainly painting the exterior of the house, replacing problems with the roof or the gutters, air conditioning. Those things are all what you have to do to maintain your cash flow.
The upkeep, so essentially what investment you have to put in just to keep it where it is.
Right. Just to keep it where it is. I mean, you wouldn't, you know, fix the roof and then raise the tenant's rent, right? I mean, this is right. Like, hey, okay. So that's called maintenance capital expenditure. And then beyond that, companies spend money to buy things that will help them grow. Mm-hmm. And those are just called capital expenditures, or growth capital expenditure. Mm-hmm. All right. So, for example, in the house, that might be that you put a bunch of money into the garage and create a mother-in-law unit. So you put in a bathroom and a kitchen, and it's a studio unit that you can rent for $1,000 a month. That's growth capital expenditure. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with maintenance. That's growth capital expenditure. So companies that are trying to maintain a certain level of growth are sort of required, they're certainly required to do maintenance CapEx, and they're sort of required to do growth CapEx to a certain degree, just to keep the growth going. They don't want to stop the initiatives that are out there.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so far?
Okay, now, so far.
What Buffett is talking about is a company that has money left over beyond that.
What makes you think that's what he means?
Because he's using the word additional capital.
Yeah, it's such a, yeah, and he even italicized it.
Yep, it's just saying the rare enterprise that can deploy additional capital. And
but
what
how
that
is
means,
that not part of growth expenditures?
Well, let's
where do you
an
draw
example.
The line?
Let's say that you are your Chipotle Mexican Grill.
How did I know?
And they're so easy because I love companies that are simple. And they think that they can put in 100 new restaurants a year.
Uh-huh.
All right. So that's all growth CapEx, the cost mm-hmm. of those 100 restaurants. Mm-hmm. Now, if they have money left over beyond the 100, they could try to put in 200 if they had a lot of money left over.
Yeah.
But they may not be able to staff up to handle that 200. So mm-hmm. there are limitations beyond just having the cash. You could have infinite amounts of money. You could still only grow so fast because sure. you just don't have the people. You with sure. me so far?
Yes. Okay.
So what that means is that when Buffett's talking about additional capital, he's talking about Chipotle having additional capital beyond the 100 restaurants it can handle building that it doesn't know what to do with, let's say, or it that it can do with what it wants.
So it's kind of, I think what maybe you're saying is like it's the cash flow that comes in or the earnings, however you want to call it, earnings small e, that is beyond what was expected, what nope. was planned for.
Nope, totally expected.
We plan to open 100 restaurants because that's what we expect to have the money for and the ability. So
it's we plan to open 100 restaurants because A, we have enough money to do that. B, we have the management team and the staffing and the infrastructure. We can handle 100. We can't handle 200, but we have the money.
Okay.
We know we're going to have the money because our earnings are cranking, you know, our cash flow is pouring in. We know we're going to have the money. So Buffett loves this kind of a company that creates what's called free cash flow.
Yeah.
Okay. So you take out.
I thought that's kind of where you were going to.
Yeah, that's where I'm going. Yeah. So where do we get free cash flow? It's operating cash on the cash flow statement minus all of your CapEx, both maintenance and growth CapEx. And what you have left is management, is money that management has about three choices for. It's got three or four. The first choice could be what a lot of tech companies are doing right now, which is just sit on it.
Yep.
Stack it up. All right. But when you do that, you have more and more equity that's building in your company, and that makes it harder and harder to get a good return on equity and a good return on invested capital. In other words, your denominator is growing every year, getting bigger and bigger, a lot faster than your earnings are growing, let's say. So that's a little bit of a ding on management. They don't like to see return on invested capital going down.
Sometimes.
Because it looks like you're not using capital very well.
It's
in the
also
short term,
like
it's not a big deal.
Pretty great a lot of the time.
Well, in the short term, it's not a big deal. In the long term, it'd be disastrous. You'd fire these people because they're not using the resources that they have properly.
Yeah, to some extent.
And as I've said here in the podcast many times, it's like, you know, one of the biggest jobs of a CEO, maybe the job of a CEO, is the allocation of capital.
Yes.
And it is the allocation of this capital that is particularly important.
But so, hold on. Can we just stick with this definition of this additional
abundance.
Capital?
Yeah, additional capital.
So do you think that, to flip it, most of the companies that Buffett's talking about do not have any additional funds beyond what they're beyond what they need for their planned growth? Is that what you're saying?
No. Most of the companies Buffett owns
Because what he's saying is this rare enterprise is different than other companies. So
yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah.
Hang in.
Okay, I'm hanging. Go for it.
Buffett loves companies that produce free cash flow. That's yes. one of his criteria. So he has a whole pile of companies that produce free cash flow. See's Candy produces a load of free cash flow. They just don't have anything to do with it. They don't know what they're going to do with it. They can't do growth CapEx. they can't, you know, they're already doing maintenance. So they have this free cash flow. Now Buffett loves them because they send him the free cash flow. Then he does something cool with it. So that's how C's managers allocate capital. They just give it to Buffett.
So the key here is not the word additional, despite his confusing italicization. Is that a word? I don't know. It's deploy. You're saying there can be other companies that have the additional cash capital, but they're not using it in a way to, quote him, at high returns in the future. That's what you're saying.
Right. Okay. Because they're not a rare company.
I thought he was talking about some kind of weird other category of funds, but no, it's the free cash.
This is free cash. And it is deployable, like I said, in about three or four places. Number one, deploy is don't deploy it, sit on it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what Buffett would think about that. Then the second possibility is give it back to the owners, either in a dividend or in buying back stock.
Yeah.
Those are both decent choices. The fourth is what a rare company can do. And that's what Buffett's talking about. And that is they can deploy it internally in creative ways that expand that company and grow return on equity and return on invested capital.
That's right. Yes. Fully agree. Yeah.
So if you're looking at companies that can do that, for example, you would look at, let's say, you know, famously Amazon takes cash that comes in and deploys it in effectively other businesses, because Bezos is just so brilliant, he starts up a business to compete with IBM's mainframes called Amazon Web Services, AWS, which just simply changes the world massively. Okay?
Well, so this that came out of employees using their salary capital, let's call it that, to take their time and come up with something that they just needed internally.
Yep, that's exactly right.
So and that's then, a way that it can be deployed is by providing employees with the opportunity to even come up with these things.
Right on. And over at Google, to take it the other direction, Google is being criticized right now for spending $22 billion a year on employee salaries that you could simply fire, because they've come up with nothing. So they've copied other companies, but they haven't developed anything on their own that is really super significant. I mean, so many different things have just gone on and run on without them. I mean, they're copying AWS right now with Google Cloud, and they're doing very well with it. But it's a copy, right? And they came up with data in glasses that went nowhere. And they've just done these things. They've got this huge moonshot group that isn't hitting the moon. But it's an example of how management has determined, let's deploy capital there and be one of these rare companies that Buffett's talking about. But it really takes a lot of creativity and a lot of smarts. You're not in your same lane, because your same lane, that's just growth CapEx. So you're changing lanes here a little bit in order to really bust this company out. Apple's done it extremely well.
I mean, that's what I was thinking the whole time you were talking about it, was how Apple just sat on billions for a long time and people got very upset about it. Right? Shareholders got very upset. And I didn't think that that was such a bad decision, actually, because they were just so ready to handle a bad economy, a downturn, be able to put a ton of money into some moonshot project. And but anyway, they started doing a dividend finally.
Or buy a company. I mean, you look over at Zuckerberg at Facebook, and he's done, or at Meta, he's done some magnificent stuff, right? Buying companies that are out there to compete with Facebook in some way, and then just taking them in under his, that's a terrific, I mean, he's exploded returns on equity by using equity well to acquire these companies. I mean, just absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And so, you know, it's just that a rare company that can do that is rare because it takes two things. First, you got to have some kind of engine that's generating enormous free cash flow.
Yes.
That's not easy right there.
And it's so rare, yeah.
Yeah. And then second, you've got to have a reasonable channel to put that stuff into. So if you went over to See's Candy, the people that run See's Candy send their money to Buffett, and Buffett owns it, so he tells them to. But conceivably, if Buffett didn't own it, you would have one of these potential debacles that happen when management tries to deploy capital into something new. And you see this in conglomerates all the time. I mean, you're seeing it in GE right now, breaking up and going in different directions, where they've acquired businesses they don't know how to run. They don't have any idea. They paid all this free cash flow out for these businesses in order to be one of these, quote, rare companies that can grow like crazy. And then they fail. They just pay too much, or they get something they don't understand. That's more common than not.
It's a really good point. I'm glad you said that, because we talk about the rare successes as though it's normal. And yeah, it's not. Most of the time, they buy a company and it doesn't work out. They don't integrate well. It's actually not what they thought it was. Or put a ton of money into R&D and they come up with nothing. And it's just gone. And then, you know, the company's doing well, and that's the end.
That's right. So, I mean, honey, right? It's right to the point of the next paragraph, which says, we also hope these favored businesses are run by able and trustworthy managers, although that's a more difficult judgment to make, and we've had our share of disappointments. I mean, the use of the word also right there is really sort of an oxymoron, if you will, because I don't know how you could have the rare enterprise that deploys additional capital with high returns without able and trustworthy managers.
I think what Buffett's talking about is they're
not trustworthy.
Yeah. He's not saying that it's secondary. He's saying that we hope, because he says it's a more difficult judgment to make. So he's saying, I can't be sure until I get in there and live it out.
Right. And then he goes on and says, there's a letter from the former controller of the United States saying, never deal with a rascal under the expectation you can prevent him from cheating you.
That's right.
He says, he said, sincerity and empathy can be easily faked. So this combination of these two necessities is what Buffett focuses on. I just think that those few little paragraphs there are so important to us as investors.
I'm so glad that you called this out, because I was focused on the additional capital and whatever that was, and actually realizing that what he's talking about is how they use it. One thing that we haven't done is sort of define that section. Like, we've got our maintenance capital, we've got our growth capital, and then this, I've always thought of this as growth. So maybe sort of calling it out in my head, at least, as a third category of what? Not quite investment, but
you sort of almost want to use the word deployable capital or something. It's like,
yeah,
but you have so many choices of where to put it, and that's I mean it's free cash flow. We know what the category is called, but how you're actually thinking about this category.
But I think particularly looking at it as somebody evaluating a company to potentially invest in, it helps me to have a category, like essentially part of my checklist, where I'm going like, okay, what do they do with that money? Rather than wrapping it in and maybe potentially skipping over that part.
Well, one way you can think about this is to look at return on invested capital and see that. Number one, you're looking at the cash flow statement, and you see that they're not buying back stock and they're not paying dividends.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the free cash flow, if any, is staying in the company in some way,
mm-hmm.
right, to be deployed. And so if their return on invested capital is going down, they're probably not deploying it. They're probably sitting on it. All right. So you could look over time and see that cash and cash equivalents is growing substantially in the company.
True.
That's a sign that management doesn't know what to do with it yet. And on the short term, that's not a bad thing. On the long term, if they just keep sitting on it, that's a bad thing. So that's the first indication of this sort of area of capital of what's going on. And then the second thing would be that their cash and invested equivalents is not growing. But their return on invested capital is staying the same or going up.
Well, that would be great.
That would be awesome. So something's going on there where they're deploying that capital and it's getting a good return.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That would be how you could look at it.
Yeah. It's very interesting to come up with this different category, because I think what's striking me is that when there are certain tech companies that do call it out, but in most companies, it's just completely talked about in a way that's the same as everything they're doing to grow the business. Like in their heads, and this is logical, it's just part of what they're doing to grow the business. Yeah, yeah. We're opening 100 new restaurants, and we're also coming up with an app where you can order your food online, and maybe we're going to do some drive-thrus. Like, this is exciting stuff, and it's just part of growing the business.
Sure.
And I can, yeah, I can see that argument as well. So
I think
it's more of it's a little more of a head game, maybe.
I think you can make that argument. You could say it's a little more of a sort of artificial category.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. But the fact that Buffett talks about it makes me give it a lot of credence.
I mean, a really, really great company, but one that, as opposed to, like, say, Amazon opening up AWS, is that, let's say, Google Search. They've got this cash cow monopoly, and let's just imagine they could put all of their free cash into growing that cash cow monopoly. No matter how much free cash they've got, they have no constraints on personnel. They have no constraints, no real constraints. They could actually spend all $50 billion of free cash flow on growing search and continue to expand. That would be a really amazing company. It's a sort of infinitely growable.
Why is that imaginary? Of course they could do that.
Well, Google might be able to do it, but really what happens is you start to see a decline in returns.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But you want to, your returns stay the same, right? To stay high. So you're getting, you know, let's say you're getting 20 cents back for every dollar you spend, and you can spend as many dollars as you want, and you'll still get 20 cents back. It's like you could put as many lemonade stands as you want to out there. It just, there's no limit to the number of lemonade stands you could put out. You don't really have a personnel problem for some reason. You could just put out as much cash as you've got in building new lemonade stands. Now, obviously, companies that are just getting going are in exactly that situation, right? I mean, if you looked at McDonald's, you know, back in 1950s, they could virtually infinitely open up new restaurants.
Gotcha. Meaning it would land in the growth category instead of...
Right. It would, you wouldn't see it as all growth. Fancy, new, exciting.
I'm just going to call it the fancy, new, exciting category. Yeah.
Right. So Buffett's basically pointing to the fact that these are rare businesses that have either unlimited growth potential virtually, or the ability to move into new lanes of business that are not, you know, they're not like a conglomerate buying, you know, that builds cars, buying a shipping company, right? It's just the businesses are parallel or they're connected.
But they're doing it successfully.
And they're doing it successfully.
Because that's the part that almost every company that's big and publicly traded is buying companies all the time. And that doesn't mean that it's a good use of capital.
Right. Exactly.
And oftentimes it doesn't work out. You know, mergers are hard. So, I think that's super key, that it's not just that they're like, oh, look, we bought 7 companies this year. They must be using their additional capital really well. No, it's common to do that. And the question is, like, how much does that contribute in the future?
And as we've talked about in the past, I mean, for a cautionary tale, look at General buying Family Dollar and just pretty much destroying themselves. It was Dollar General that bought them, right?
I don't know anything about this. Dollar General. Okay. Maybe we have one dollar store bought another dollar store.
Yeah, they bought Family Dollar and leveraged up to buy it, you know, and you know, put a lot of debt on the company, and then couldn't integrate it. Their idea was, we're going to integrate it. It turned out they're really two very different markets, different businesses, and they couldn't integrate them. They've just been absorbing the losses ever since. It was like 10 years ago.
That's rough. Wow.
Yeah. So exactly, yeah. To your point, that's what usually happens.
It happens a lot.
You meet a mediocre management team with a lot of free cash flow, you're going to get that. And that's why Buffett is saying, you know, we really hope you get people who are talented, because otherwise they're going to squander it.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Well, cool. I love that you basically called out this new category of exciting cash flow.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
So do you want to keep talking about the Buffett letter, or should we wrap up our the Buffett letter and then the weather next time?
Yeah, I think let's see if there's a little bit more we can squeeze out of this fabulous letter.
The reason I'm asking is if you want anybody listening to read a certain section, this would be a good time to say it. But if you don't know, that's also fine.
Yeah, I think just read it. Well, nothing's streamingly jumping out at me here.
Okay, cool.
So let's wrap up on Berkshire next time.
Okay, love it. Thanks, everybody.
All right, all the best. See you now. Hi guys, thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding, they really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice, because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.